sexy, spooky bones.
Hello and welcome to the Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I am Rolando.
And I'm John. Hello, everyone. We're spooky. Ooh.
And welcome, John, to the show.
They're afraid of you. They're so afraid of me. I'm so scary. No, it's because you're a zombie. You're like, you know, falling apart. No, it's because I'm like, ooh, scary.
And welcome to the show. This week,
hold on,
we will review. Go ahead.
Do you think I should voice Chucky? Do you think I should take over the reins from Brad Dourif and be like, "Hey kids, ooh, I'm gonna hurt you. I'm not sorry."
When he retires, I think you got a shot.
Hey, Tiff, you got big boobs. Ooh. We're always able to run away from Chucky because he just won't shut up.
Very loud. It's loud stepper.
And that's our show.
That's our show. That's our opinion of Chucky. Yes. Season 3, episode 3. No, this week we will review In a Violent Nature. As always, John will give us a plot in 5 words. We'll give our first thoughts, and then we'll go do a spoiler analysis. But first, go back to TV Corner. We're reviewing Chucky, season 3, episode 3, Jennifer's Body.
Yes.
So this is another one of those, like,
where you got excited because it was a kind of a Tiffany-centric show episode for half of it.
What do you mean? I'm always excited. this is the episode they did last year, which was their first episode, which is where they do like a quick, where are we right now in our story before they launched them into the fucking thing.
Oh,
the church. Do you know what I mean? This is how that episode felt, because it felt like there was a lot of loose plot threads because we just started with the White House.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, and also in the lackluster couple of episodes.
And in fact, I remember correctly that I didn't particularly like the first episode of season 2 because I thought it was like taking too long to kind of set up what I thought was going to be a rather interesting premise, like setting.
Yeah.
Specifically, this does the opposite, and I think I would have preferred this at the beginning and then built up to the White House stuff.
Yeah. This was just not. Does that make, there was no reason for it to be like this weird, like, why is he at the White House? Why is he boring?
I think it's a. I think that this, at least I'll give you credit that at least it explains why we are where we are,
which is pretty
in the
funny
story. Yes,
because what this, the half of the episode is about what happened to Tiff, right? How, yes, Chucky for whatever reason decided to keep her alive because she's gonna go to jail forever anyway, instead of just killing her. I don't know, but
right.
And then the other half of the episode is him realizing that he is aging and turning fleshy. And he goes to a witch doctor with his new grooming companion, Carolyn.
Yes. He's
grooming her for whatever. You know, it's just, you know, whatever.
Odd relationship, yeah.
And she's the one that takes him to the witch doctor. Which this witch, you know, we're calling him a witch doctor because I think they even mention it in the show that he's a witch doctor. He acts and looks, for all intents and purposes, like a doctor, except for supernatural beings.
Right, that's a joke, right? That it's just a normal, boring, sterile doctor's office.
Which,
but it's
kind of a cool idea. I mean, if there's going to be a spinoff series about just the weird shit that happens in this world, and it kind of also explains why people just don't seem to give a shit about these really insane things happening. I guess that showcases that this world is full of just really weird crap.
Yeah. I hated it.
Yeah, I figured.
No, I hate it. No, I didn't hate it. That's the exaggeration. But like, I just think that it's no, it's a funny idea.
Yeah.
But like, if we were to like now add, if we try to think about it too much, it's kind of dumb.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like, if we try to overanalyze, like, it's a fun joke. It's, you know, I get it. Haha. You know, he's a normal doctor explaining to him what's wrong with him, why he's aging. And I like that they actually brought back the fact that he was baptized.
Yes. So, yeah, because he's infected with Christian magic, which is apparently worse than evil. So he's going to find something more evil than Christian magic.
Which is why the thing that he worships is leaving him.
Yes.
Because he was baptized. So, which is why he's getting older, which is why... What is the idea here? That he wants to kill a bunch of people to
six
get good?
People to appease whatever his name is.
Yes, yeah.
Which he tries, what, they go to the Amityville Horror House because he's like, oh, this place used to be super evil. And then it wasn't evil enough.
Mm-hmm.
So where does Chucky have to go? Where's the most evil place in the United States?
Mar-a-Lago.
I was going to say, yeah, you're right. The Raising Cane's, they just opened up in North Hollywood.
The traffic situation is terrible.
Yes, the trying to get onto the 110 from downtown with those, or trying to split off to the 101 from...
It's a parking lot.
Anything near downtown freeways is probably the most evil place on earth.
Yes. I like that they at least gave a reason why he chose the White House.
Yeah.
Though I'm unconvinced that that's a good idea. So, does that make sense? Like, yeah. I'm glad they took the time to explain why he's in the White House, because it is a bit jarring in the first episode. It did leave me... First episode of this season, it didn't leave me like feeling like, what is going on? Why is he here? Why is he getting away with murdering people? Why don't the kids? Like, it's just too many questions.
And I'm not convinced that this is Chucky Prime. I feel like Chucky Prime is dead.
I don't even know. It must be Chucky Prime because he's with fucking the little girl.
Oh, Carolyn, yeah.
Yeah. So
right,
it's just,
but they never explained how he was hiding out in the bride doll that entire time.
No, they did not.
So,
but I'm assuming that's just another like Don Mancini thing.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like, he has a certain thing he likes to write. I find his. Is it Caitlin?
Which one? Carolyn?
Carolyn.
Yes.
She's a very boring character.
Yeah.
It's cool that she's been around since the first season, and like this turn was kind of calculated since then. But now that they have that, now she's fully on board with Team Chucky here. Like, she's pretty boring. I low-key almost would have thought Glenda would have been a better fit.
Yeah.
Story-wise, because they're more interesting characters.
Yeah.
But I think part of the conceit to that is the fact that they're good. They're like good people. You know what I mean? They're like, so they would never be motivated to stay with Chucky. You know what I mean?
Well, I feel like the only reason they are good is because Glenn is good. Glenda's not necessarily good.
Right.
Glenn likes to murder people.
Yeah, I think the way they set the characters up, it's kind of like Chucky has kids, and then the kids are like, don't want to be like their dad.
Yeah.
Right? That's kind of the idea. But I like those characters, and I like what they did with the show last year. And or last season.
Oh, and you like that so. Pippin is the, or what's his name? Is the voice of Glendon as the doll?
Yeah, Boyd, right?
Forgot.
Billy Boyd or some shit. Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Yeah. I find her character to be very boring. Like, I'm not quite, like, again, like, I don't, she's just kind of like this evil girl, and she just, there's no, like, the little time that we spent with her this episode for the first time, she seems pretty unspectacular as a character.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no flavor to anything she does. She's just, okay. She's very blasé evil.
Yeah, she's like, oh, no, I'll watch. Stuff like that. Yeah. Like, it's kind of like, I get it because it's like, she's supposed to be like a little kid, and that's the shocking factor, that she's like totally okay with this thing that Chucky does. But I think the show kind of like,
I just don't know. It just doesn't feel shocking. She's Caucasian, right? She's a white girl, and she's going to be whatever.
Yeah.
If it's cool to do, she's going to do it.
I think partly why it doesn't work for me is because they introduced this idea that throughout Chuck the show, like, there's been people that have like been a part of Chucky's team before, so this just feels like somebody else. This is nothing really like special about it, I guess. And plus, like, pre all of this, like pre her joining Chucky, there was really nothing as a character that stood out to me either, aside from being weird and violent, and in fact, we even thought that she was a bit autistic side, right? So, which doesn't seem to really bear out, right? I mean, they're not, or at least they're not exploring it like as a TV show. It could be like
choice. Like, oh, she's coming out of her shell now because she's allowed to be evil. I don't know. Yeah, it's kind of a boring character. You're right. I agree with that.
And they're pretty much they're not the entire episode, but they're a good part of this episode because it literally picks up where 3 ends, where Chucky reveals that he was the female doll,
the bride doll, yeah.
The bride doll, and then tries to kill Tiffany, and then Tiffany is arrested,
yeah, because Nika rats her out.
Yes, yeah.
But then there's like a weird part where Nika kind of shows like very Chucky-esque traits when Tiffany is getting hauled off to jail. And she starts to get like really evil looking, and she says all these things almost in a Chucky voice, and Tiff's just like, oh, okay, I'm sorry, and then she just goes off.
Yeah, I just feel like this is a case of a character, Nika, that kind of already had her conclusion last year, and it just seems like this feels like leftover stuff.
Well, they do need another mother father figure now.
You that's know? True.
So I think they've been true. Building up to this point.
Good point. Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. Orphan kids need another guardian.
Hey, it's probably not a curse. I wouldn't worry about it. You should take care of these kids. Everybody else has died. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, like
it's gonna be fine.
Well, if what you say happens, then like Nika won't die. We know that for sure. That'd be the end of that.
Yeah.
Thing, you know. So. Yeah, I think it again, like this whole White House thing never rings true for me because Chucky decides to get in. He's going to be left at a cemetery, so the littlest boy can pick it up.
Yeah, because one of the president's sons, I don't know what they're alluding, had an accident, maybe possibly committed the accident intentionally, or I don't know. Maybe Chucky killed this kid. I don't know how he did that. Anyway, Yeah.
Also, I think like you and I being both raised Hispanic, like our mothers, if we were to pick something up and our mothers saw it, we'd be like, put that shit back. Don't touch that. Yeah. like
it's a fucking gross fucking
doll. Put that shit away. Yeah, put that fucking thing down. Don't touch the trash. Don't pick up trash. Because literally it's just fucking a doll sitting conveniently by the fucking tombstone.
Which is also like, hey, this was potentially a gift that somebody left for their dead relative. Like, just take it. It's fine. Just take it.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah, like the common sense of, common sense of that's stupid. Yeah. Like, again, like, they're just, unfortunately, I feel like they're just not making this whole White House thing work.
No.
For me. And I'll like it. Just what I mean by that is like it just needs to be plausible, which it's not plausible yet.
How would you feel though if they finally go to the White House and Chucky's not there, and instead he's on a Hollywood movie set that takes place at the White House? Because that would also be one of the most evil places on Earth. So
that would make more sense. Yeah. That I feel like, didn't they make one movie like that? It's a film. It's a movie about Chucky. It's a movie about Child's Play.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe.
And you know what I mean? They do that whole thing where it's like, oh, this is supposed to be the actor that plays Charles Lee Ray. And
I
feel like they make that movie. Yeah, okay. Am I crazy? Isn't that the plot for...
Was it Don Mancini's New Nightmare? I'm just kidding.
But you're the Chucky historian of the show.
Yeah, so the more we got into Chucky, the more I was like, you know what? Maybe I don't remember shit.
I'm thinking it's like, isn't that the plot of Bride of Chucky? Aren't they on a film set?
Oh yeah, you're right. That's how they run into Jennifer Tilly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there you go. We figured it out. So you didn't have to at home. You're welcome. Anyway.
I feel like that would have probably been, if they had done it here, it would have been like see, that would be a good twist, because it'd be like he'd be doing White House stuff and be like, cut, and then it flips and you actually see that it's just a bunch of actors and shit.
Yeah,
I'd be okay with that. I mean, clearly it's not.
Oh, and then yeah, but, and then Chucky, I'm sorry everybody, we're just listening to what we wish the show was. Like, this episode was way, way better, but it still was just like, okay, I think.
It was an improvement. Yeah. It was an improvement, yeah.
But it would be funny if you went back to the set of where they got Jennifer Tilly and they know that that's evil. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, I think it would be much easier to skewer Hollywood. Is that just low-hanging fruit at this point? Although woke lesbians and you know, I mean,
yeah, I guess so. I don't know,
eating at Chipotle or I don't know, something.
Mendocino Farms
and getting Jenny's ice cream.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, did you know Nestle owns Blue Bottle? Let's go there. And yeah, for everybody at home, those are...
We're too LA.
We're too LA because we know about Mendocino Farms.
We sold out.
Oh, man. Anyway, so that's this episode. I don't know. I'm not sure. I thought I was more excited about it, but then the more I thought about it, I was like, it's just better.
Is it just me? Am I coloring your... Am I influencing you? Opinion on you? Okay.
No, I remember watching and thinking like, oh, okay, this is so much better. But then the more I thought about the episode, the more I was like, we really had to sit through two episodes, though, before we got to this, and it's just better.
Yeah, I feel like they made a mistake. This should have been the first episode. They did it last year, and frankly, it would have made sense to do it again this year, yeah, or whatever, this season. But yeah, I don't know.
Let's see what happens, I guess. We're going to finish this one.
We're halfway done. Yeah. We're almost halfway done. Yeah.
You know what?
Okay.
I'll give it this. Yellow Jackets also had like four really fucking bad episodes that last season.
Yeah, the entire second season is a mess.
Yeah,
like in retrospect, like, no, looking back on it,
at least so much of those fun. I don't know. Yeah,
so much that colored my my opinion of it was that like I really enjoyed the first season and was waiting for it to like hit, giving it, you know, room to like hit those levels for me, because I was, the first season was so good, but it never did. So we'll see. I mean, this, we'll see. I mean, we'll see what the show
still
is.
More episodes left.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's move over to our main review of In a Violent Nature. John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please. Yes, for In a Violent Nature, starring Viggo Mortensen, who is an assassin who went to a life of leisure. Just kidding. What's the name of that movie?
What plot are you describing?
The Viggo Mortensen one. Was it a
History of Violence? Lord of the Rings. Oh, close.
For In a Violent Nature, coming in at number 3, who needs dialogue and a score?
There you go.
Coming in at number 2, for In a Violent Nature, we have Jason at home. This is Jason at home. And coming in at number 1, for In a Violent Nature, the walking and walking dead.
So my guess is that you didn't like this movie.
Well, I thought it was a really cute indie film, indie romantic comedy about this one guy who comes up from the dead, and he's just kind of like, well, at least I'm in nature, and he just kind of walks around for about 50 minutes of the runtime, enjoying nature, playing with a toy car for a little bit, and
live, laugh, love. Yeah, yeah, that's what he does.
And he goes and he murders people that cannot be real, because I don't know, I don't think I've even heard conversations from the most boring people like this. It's just like, what are they fucking talking about? I think at one point one of them gets upset. Like, it's there, I don't know what the twist is here. I don't think there is one, right?
Twist? What do you mean twist? Describe, like, what you mean.
What would be the spoilers, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at.
What happens at the end? The last 30 minutes, maybe?
I was going to say, you're going to have to enlighten me on that, because I don't know if anything did happen at the end. The last, like, 10 minutes of this movie, I'm like, what happened? Is anything happening? There's somebody talking. I was just gonna say, there's a part where I don't think there is any spoiling, that there is, this is supposed to be the perspective of the killer. I think that was the main driving point of what, you know, the trailers and all that. They have dialogue off screen, right, with these other characters that I kept forgetting existed. I mean, I forgot what they look like all the time. Just saying, like, no, I don't care if his fucking dad died. He's killing the vibe, or like shit like that, which was kind of funny, but like, I was also like, what is this?
Yeah.
I don't know. But how'd you feel about it? I feel like you loved it.
Love is a strong word. I just, actually, I liked it. I liked it quite a bit. I like, this movie is, I'll say up front, this movie is not scary.
No.
It's at all. But I feel like the sort of slow, methodical way he directed the movie gave it, and the setting was really cool. So it gave it a lot of vibes to it. But I'll say first, before that, that, I thought this was going to be a gimmick movie, kind of like that everything would be done from a third perspective, kind of like behind his back as he goes and chases and kills people, kind of like the video game. What is it? Dead by Daylight?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes.
So I thought it'd be like that. So I was like, oh, that's really cool. And they made a whole movie about it and pretty excited about it. But almost immediately, they do a weird jump cut. In the first 5 minutes, you're like, a weird... We literally open with him, you know, rising from the ground. I don't think this is a spoiler because it happens early on, right? But he rises from the ground, and then we're literally following him as he's walking into the forest because they stole the locket from his from his mother, I think is what I understand it to that what it was, and it was put there as his as a marker for him.
Also, what are the roles of this Johnny character? His name is Johnny. Not to be confused with Jason. Because he's got a like a breathing tube. Like when he's coming out of the ground, there's a breathing tube. Okay. So, and then we find out later somebody put him there. Like, why did they leave a fucking breathing tube?
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway.
No, you're right. 100%. I think that so once that gets dispelled, that we're not actually following through with this idea that following him third person, though, to be fair, a lot of this movie is from his perspective. A lot of it is, but it's not
detriment, I would add.
There are limitations of directing. Yeah. I feel like he found that out almost immediately. 5 minutes in and he's like cutting around and he's like, really leave this guy's perspective. But so I was like, once that disappointment got dispelled and just watching the movie now, it's fucking, I'm surprised this guy didn't get sued by the people who own Friday the 13th.
It is.
Because it's
a blatant ripoff of a lot of different movies, yeah.
Without, exactly. It's Friday the 13th, right? It's basically, it's every 80s slasher movie, only this one purposely takes a lot of the ideas from Friday the 13th and just superimposes them here for what I'm assuming was supposed to be like a more meaningful, deeper reasons as to why.
Yeah.
Not quite. That part of the movie didn't really land with me, though it was super interesting to just spend all your time with this character.
Well, again, probably to his detriment. Like, I didn't need what felt like there is one tracking sequence where you're following this guy for 10 minutes. I don't know. Like, it changes time of day as well, and you're still following him. And then it just cuts to, like, whatever the guys are doing, which I was like, what?
There's incredible, the incredible amount of limitations in this movie, right?
Like, if you told me the people that made Skinema Rink decided to make this movie, I'd believe you.
I was a little worried about that because the first shot is very Skinema Rink, which always has me scared. Because it's like, oh my god, it's gonna be one of those movies where I'm gonna looking at like half cut off stuff and eventually it gets going, it gets paced, it's, you know, it's a very, it's purposely plotted and paced to be very slow. So I think there was something interesting about the fact that, like, we're following this guy and he's killing people. He's essentially Jason. It's like, it's a big what if. Like, literally all you can think about is like, what if we just followed Jason through an entire movie? What would that be?
Yeah, and it also feels like nobody understands the rules of this guy. Like, there's like, oh, that locket's important. And it's also like, how did you know about the locket? Like, how does everybody know that this locket's important when all the information we have about this locket? Johnny walks into what I'm assuming was his old house, and there's some dude squatting in there that gets in an argument with the park ranger, who like drives off. And I think this is part of probably one of the funnier parts of the story, is this dude who's squatting in the house, some older guy that sets out a shit ton of traps or whatever. And the ranger's trying to get him to like get rid of the traps. He's like, nah, I do whatever I want. I'll shoot you with all my guns, blah, blah, blah. Johnny walks in his old house. There's like a mirror, but instead of seeing his face, he sees his father and his mom, and his father going, as long as you have this locket, your mom will always be with you. I was like, okay. And that's all we get. So how does everybody else know about that?
Because it's revealed a little later with the... He famously died there in that very small area, because the people at the campfire, they explain the origins of the Johnny. Talk about how he was...
But I don't remember them talking about the locket. The locket felt like a very intimate thing between Johnny and his parents.
So there was the park ranger. So that kind of like the park ranger knows who he is because it's alluded to that the park ranger has actually fought Johnny before.
Yes, or his dad, right?
I kind of feel like they made it seem like it was him, like he's done this before.
Yeah, I think
only this time he died or some shit, right?
What I got from it was that his dad put him in the ground after his entire family got killed.
Yeah.
And I guess okay, that makes sense. Then he knew enough to leave the locket there.
Yeah, so we have to chalk it up to like supernatural because I mean, not if we really like these are the way some of these movies are designed, like these slasher movies, right? Like, why is he, you know, why is Jason motivated by, you know, what, you know, if you're using the exact thing they're trying to crib from, Jason, why does he do what he does? Why is he still alive? Why is he the Walking Dead? Why, you know, why, you know, exactly. Like, it's kind of like this locket was the fucking thing. It's the thing that keeps it's his motivation to leave where he's at. It's the, what is it? What's the famous screenwriting book? Kill the Cat, or what is it called? you know what I'm talking about?
No. Are you talking about like it's like Chekhov's gun? No, not Chekhov's gun. But like, yeah, no, I get like what you're saying. It's
like there's this famous movie about this chick who she loses her cat, and so she leaves and asks everybody in her neighborhood where the cat is. And that's kind of like what the whole movie's about. It's her getting out of her apartment, interacting with her neighborhood and talking with everybody or something like that. So like it's just the motivation. The cat is an excuse to motivate her to get out and talk to her neighbors that she had no relationship prior to. And we get to meet like fun and interesting characters. So the locket is just a fucking,
oh, they're just missing the fun and interesting characters. So
no, I mean, yeah, no, I didn't like any of the human characters in this at all. No. They were terribly written and uninteresting. But can you say that? You can say that about like every Friday the 13th movie ever made. They're all terrible actors and characters. You heard it here first,
folks. Rolando shooting shots at Kevin Bacon for being a terrible actor in the first Friday the 13th
movie. Yeah, I'm coming for you, Bacon.
I get it. I don't know. I guess I wasn't too fond of this movie. There's also other moments where it's like, for one, I did appreciate that nobody had the wherewithal, like not everybody's gonna be Ash Williams from Evil Dead and be like, I need to immediately chop up this person. But they're like, are some shots, the deaths are cool, they make very little sense. There's like this one woman who's like doing yoga on a cliffside, and Johnny's, you know, he never runs, but like he'll walk rapidly, I guess, at a faster pace sometimes. I don't know.
At speed.
And she's like, oh no. And then she turns around and she just looks over the cliff like, oh, she's not sure what to do. And these shots are so long and try to track for such a long time to be artsy, I guess, that this actress is literally just standing there. And I think I briefly talked about this, how when people think they're trying to be innovative by doing something different, like, we don't need a score, which is like, just say you don't have money for it, whatever. But don't be like, we don't need a score because I wanted this to feel like a nature documentary. And I'm like, have you ever seen a nature documentary? They do have
music. Is that what he said?
Yeah. Like, I had to look that up. And I was like annoyed by that statement. Like, no, dude, there's nothing innovative about what you're doing. You just thought like, oh, you know, because nature documentaries, you just, it's quiet and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, that's not true at all. But, you know, like this actress just stands there. And I have to point out, I wasn't impressed by anybody's acting whatsoever in this. I thought they were all kind of bad. She stands there. She gets stabbed. Doesn't make any noise. And then Johnny's able to pull the chain that, I don't even know what that was. It's like a chain with a sickle at the end of it or something. Or like psych or something. I'm not really sure what that was, but pulls it through her abdomen, stabs her in the head, like her skull with it, and then starts to pull, so it breaks her neck, and she never makes any noise, and pulls her head through her stomach.
Yeah.
I was like, cool, okay. And I thought maybe
I thought it was awful. It was really gross.
I was like, looking. You know, I mentioned that I don't think Rolando's gonna like how graphic this is. But I thought maybe that was just like a fluke, like, oh, okay. She's the only person that's not gonna make any noise, but then like another dude doesn't make any noise whatsoever either. And he's getting slowly chopped to pieces.
Yeah.
Or not even slowly chopped to pieces. He gets like one arm chopped off. And then he gets his head chopped off. So I didn't understand why Johnny bothered to chop off his arm. To show he can't make noise? I don't know.
Yeah. I think he was dead already, but I don't know. It was very ambiguous as the nature of that character, whether he was alive or dead. That particular individual, that particular death scene.
Yeah.
The girl scene you're talking about, I think that's just bad editing. Like... Yeah. You know, that's just bad editing, and I think that, like... But I thought it should be said that, like, all the special effects stuff is really cool.
Yeah.
Not to my taste, right? I don't really care about the violence, right? But, like, still, I thought I could appreciate the fact that the guy clearly knows what he wants and is executed in a fun, interesting way.
Let's say if it wasn't humans Johnny was killing, what if they were, like, intergalactic aliens that were trying to stop this one alien... Yeah. And then that was all the blood and guts stuff. Because our director writer, as Rolando knows, was the on-set special effects creature guy for Psycho Gorman.
Yeah. Classic here. One of my favorites of the Skeleton Boys. Yeah. I was okay with it. I don't know. It was fine. It worked. Is it perfect? No, I don't think it is at all. I think that it's very like there's a lot of like things that he stumbled upon.
Okay.
You know, that's a fair conceit. Like I don't even like, but I think that he made the movie he wanted to make. Like he had a very singular vision about all this, and he did the thing he wanted to do. And the things that really work, there's things that really work in this movie, and there's things that don't work at all. Like you said, like no score, some of the story.
Yeah,
I felt like he had an idea, but then like he needed to add a story to it because there's no, you know, he needed to add a plot, but he had an idea for a movie.
Also, did reshoots for about 70% of it. Maybe that had a lot of effect.
That's right. Yeah. It's mentioned that he did like. It's interesting because he says that he had a problem with the guy's first performance, so he like went back and reshot a lot of it, which
or he had a medical problem, I think.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, but that's a very valuable lesson, right? Like I think you and I would probably know that like whoever is in 90% of your movie is probably going to be like how he walks and how he like moves and stuff like. It's going to be important to the plot because that's all you're really experiencing. Yeah. But he's a first-time filmmaker, right? So he had to go through all that to kind of... But it also shows his tenacity, too, because he went out there and said, like, no, this isn't the movie I want. I'm going to go fucking do it again. So,
well, yeah, he saved a lot of money because he didn't pay anybody to edit or score it. So, yeah, what can we kind of... touch on here and there. There's really no plot to this. It's just Johnny wakes up and starts killing people that happen to be nearby. And there's a lot of establishing dialogue saying, mm-hmm. hey, the town's in dire straits, so nobody lives there anymore, basically.
But dude, how do you feel about the fact that like we are by the how do you feel about the fact that like the story is told to you through other people? As opposed to,
I was thinking about that, and I ultimately decided it felt lazy, or just this guy is not a writer, and he has not really taught himself how to write. There was just something about it that felt too amateur. I think I had mentioned this feels a lot like, hey, our friends made this movie. I'm going to go support them. Like, that wasn't that bad. But since it wasn't my friends, I'm like, I didn't think it was good.
I think it's quite a novel idea that the plot of the movie is told by other people that we just encounter.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we're just literally just like, he's walking and he's looking.
Except for the locket, which was, they know the thing, but it was explained to us through Johnny's vision of his dad and his mom talking to him.
Yes, yeah. That the locket was kind of the key.
Which was also a fucking direct rip from, like, Friday the 13th, too.
Yes, yeah. Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. This movie completely, like, surprised there isn't a lawsuit. Surprised this movie got released at all. like they literally are just cribbing from, like, every Friday the 13th movie. Which, so, like...
The second Friday the 13th... Man, I'm trying to bring it up real quick. There's a character at the end of this movie that picks up another character, which I don't know. I'm not even trying to, like, hide names. I don't remember anybody. She plays a character in the second Friday the 13th, Vicky, Lauren Mary Taylor.
Oh, of course. Everybody knows their character.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. She plays famously in this movie, In a Violent Nature, the character called The Woman.
Yes. I think that there's like, I think it's a really cool idea that, like, we're told the story from other people's, like, you know, conversations.
Yeah.
Now, what I didn't like is that the dialogue is not very good.
No.
And some of the acting's iffy, right?
That's why I don't think this guy really has friends. I don't think he knows. He's never had a conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it's very singular what he wanted to make.
Yeah.
Because, like, the character you're referring to also has really awkward ways of dialogue, awkward dialogue that doesn't quite... It's very awkwardly written.
Yeah.
And you can, in my opinion, you can tell, kind of tell the actor didn't know how to deliver it because it's very, like, clunky the way it's written.
Like, most of the actors, and also, I think, honestly, that's why I said, like, it's just kind of poor acting. I don't know, like, to begin with.
You could chalk it up to that.
But as well as, like, the dialogue's bad. Like, there's a part where the person who tells a story around the campfire about Johnny is trying to leave, sneak out the back, and for some reason they're egging him on because they're like, oh, you're going to go to the gas station where those chicks are at. You're going to go fill them up. You're going to go, like, they keep egging him on about that. I'm like, what is going on? It's weird. Like, he's going to go and walk, like, what was it, like, 4 hours into the forest to do that? Like, I don't think so.
Yeah. And then, he subsequently kills him. But, violently. I thought that was actually, I mean, like I said, like, I thought, like, all the kills were really cool.
Yeah, the kills were cool.
And
one of them was really funny, and I think that was intentional, but at that point when I was watching the movie, I was just like, yeah, it's funny. I don't know. Is towards the end, I guess, two people are left alive, and again, I'm not trying to hide names, I don't remember anybody, and this guy thought it would be a good idea to scream at him to be a distraction, but was standing right behind him, so Johnny had to just turn around and start chopping him away. I'm like, what was that?
I mean,
that was funny.
I mean, clearly the guy seems to have a more fun directing action, right? I mean, yeah. Like, he has that really cool shot where he, like, throws the axe, and the guys are two characters, like, running away from him, and then, like, he throws the axe, and we can hear it, like, he hit something, yeah. But then we follow him, like, an almost like a over the head shot, right? We follow him until we get to the fact that he hit him in the head with his axe, and he's, like, pulling it out, and
or he picks up a big rock and he
to
walks
break over the other, yeah, that's right, yeah,
the guy that he stabbed in the leg with that axe, I guess, was crawling, and with one throw of the rock turns his head into a watermelon. It just explodes.
And yeah, like, but it was like all that stuff was super effective.
Yeah,
like clearly that those are the things that he felt comfortable with, that he was probably knew more about, more experienced with.
Yeah, that's what it felt like. You're right. Yeah.
And then he had it's just everything else just kind of is kind of hit and miss, like the acting and the.
I think like some first time directors don't understand the whole kill your darlings thing, especially. I'm assuming he's like a little bit older than somebody that would be just starting out,
right?
Because like, don't if you don't know how to write a script, don't write a script. You know, give real writers the idea of what you want. I don't know, stuff like that. Like,
especially with this is not an easy concept either. I mean, this whole concept like needed more time cooking, you know, because it was kind of like a little short. You know. There's still a lot of clever stuff in here. Okay, cool. Do you want to just... I'll go to the spoilers and we'll just talk a little bit about the ending.
Wait! No, stop. Stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into...
Spoilers.
There's a couple. So the guy who took the locket gave it to his girlfriend. And she ends up being like our final girl or whatever, right? She ends up being the one at the end.
Yes.
Everybody else dies. And I like that, to describe it, basically she's escapes from him and is walking. It becomes daytime and she's still walking down this road and she's picked up by the woman you had referred to. I think she's just named Woman, honestly. Yeah, I think she had a name.
That's what I saw in the credits. Just the woman.
And they begin to, it's kind of a, what I liked about this idea, which I shared with you before we recorded, is I like the idea of the fact that we have a perspective shift, because now the movie is not from his perspective, Johnny or whatever.
Yeah.
We're following this final girl as she's in the truck and she's injured and the woman's talking to her, and so they have the last few shots of this movie is her basically staring out, her pulled over, she's terrified and she's looking out into the forest, and we think you see Johnny in there, you think you don't, but yeah. I like that it's kind of saying like the trauma that it leaves, an event like this would leave, which was interesting, like it was a quick, but it kind of doesn't work because of the woman in it. Because I feel like she kind of pulls too much attention away from the main character. Because she's literally, our main character, or the perspective we've shifted to, is just sitting in the car.
Yeah, she's
slowly bleeding out. Like, doesn't say much. And this woman just sort of just takes a lot of the talking and you know, and she's like this monologuing constantly.
Dude.
And she's like this mysterious woman, and it's kind of like, is this gonna add up to anything?
Go anywhere? Yeah.
Are you the mother, yeah. Or who the fuck are you? You know,
that's
like
exactly what I thought it was gonna be. Or I thought she was just gonna drive her around in a circle and then let Johnny take her. Nope, it's just some woman rambling about like some animals just kill things because of reasons. And I'm like, that has nothing to do with Johnny though. We already know what he is.
You kind of clumsily see, like, maybe they wrote that to, like, insinuate sort of idea, another concept of Johnny, right? That he's, like, this undying animal or something. Which, that hard eye roll on that, but...
Especially because it doesn't add up to anything.
It doesn't really add up to anything. She literally pulls over and is be like, you know, you're bleeding out too much. I have to fix your leg now. We're not. She's like, no, I want to go to the hospital. To see the hospital. No. I need to do this now. And so it's like this dread of like, oh no, here something's going to happen.
Yeah.
And nothing happens, right? But I think that was kind of the point, is that it's this now. This character, this person lives with this trauma, this fear from what she's just experienced.
Especially because I don't character. Think she ever let go of that fucking locket, right? I think it's probably still in her possession.
I lost track of where it was, honestly, dude. I don't know if she kept it because she didn't have it on her. She was wearing it and Johnny was aware of it. But then at some point, I think she took it off or some fucking shit like that. I don't know. I couldn't keep track of it. I'm sure there's an answer to that. I just don't have it. I just couldn't keep track of it. So There's not even that little story thread either where like, oh, she kept the locket, so therefore Johnny's going to hunt her and kill her forever. There's not even that, right?
No.
It's not like we're never going to get like Johnny Takes Manhattan or Shimshed, right? Like he's never, we're never going to get to like an urban area for this guy.
We're not going to get, Johnny's not going to get his Andy Barclay.
Right, yeah. Like this is...
His Laurie Strode's.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so...
Yeah, so I guess it's just in his nature to be violent. Ba-dum.
Alrighty. Do you have any other thoughts? Are you ready to rate it? Or
I'm ready to rate it.
Great. Okay. Johnny.
I'm just going to speak, remain quiet.
Yes.
This is going to link to a video of me just walking in the forest for like 6 hours.
Yeah. How many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give it?
Sexy bones.
Don't do that. Just rate the movie.
I'm going to give In a Violent Nature 4 long drawn out sexy spooky bones.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go a little higher. I think this is an interesting movie with flaws. I'll say a 7.
I think
there's a lot of like atmosphere and blood, and I think that it's interesting the way the filmmaker, even with his shortcomings, still made something that I think I found interesting.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a one-of-a-kind approach. That kind of loses its novelty a little bit. Like the whole idea of the third person being third person behind a Jason-esque killer, you know, doesn't quite pay off in the ways of its ambition, but it's a good try. So...
Like, I don't think I will watch this again, nor will I look forward to a sequel.
We're just going to soon forget it.
Yeah.
Forever. So we're never going to watch Into a Violent Nature.
Into the Wild Violent Nature.
Into the Wild. Cool. All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals, thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky.